Welcome back, everyone, to Latina Chica Speaks magazine and podcast. Today, I have a very special episode with Melissa, the co-founder of Buried Under the Blue.
Hi, my name is Melissa Rechiga, and I'm from Buried Under the Blue. And I wanted to say thank you for having us on your show and opening up space so we could have a discussion.
Today, we will be discussing what Buried Under the Blue is and the recent demonstration at the historical site of three communities, Palo Verde, Bishop, and La Loma. This was a diverse community with working class backgrounds, including indigenous communities. Of course, Melissa will tell us more about that. And today, we are going to talk about a recent demonstration as well that took place where these communities used to stand, which is now Dodger Stadium.
But before we go any further, I just want to quickly plug in the magazine. If you haven't checked it out, go check it out. LatinaChicaSpeaksMagazine.com. Check out our various categories that include art, travel, food, social justice, and so much more. So go check it out. We're always having different content. And if you subscribe to our mailing list, you will get notifications on when we have new podcast episodes, including this one, and other content that we have on the magazine. So check it out. And you can always contact us to our email at latinachicaspeaks@gmail.com. You can check out our Instagram page, Latina Chica Speaks Pod, or the magazine at Latina Chica Speaks Magazine. Melissa, would you like to tell them where they can find you all in the social media?
We have a website at www.buriedunderTheBlue.com. Our social media handlers are Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. We have pages set up on all of those platforms. So feel free to reach out, look at our context, please share. We really need support from the community right now to really share and elevate this story. The Dodgers are working really hard and spending a lot of these brown dollars that you guys give them against us to silence and bury the story because they don't want to be held accountable along with the city of Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm. Well, I hope you guys check that out. And not only that this episode really informs you guys on the importance of this narrative, but also how badly not only the Dodger Stadium, but even the city of LA has wanted to erase this history. And not only that, the consequences of their decisions, right? And what happened.
Are you ready to start?
Yeah, and just to follow up a little bit more on what you're saying, not only what they did then, but what is also happening now in the current, you know, with this huge housing crisis. I mean, those are the same kind of words that they used in 60 years ago. They were in a housing crisis. And right now we're in a pandemic and the eviction moratorium is about to end in 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. The widespread eviction. So again, this is where we see the city of Los Angeles still with the same bad behavior and mm-hmm. then major corporations like the Dodgers. So, you know, these two together are fueling and funding gentrification. So I think it's really important that we understand that what happened to us is happening now to all of your communities. So it's not, you know, people can't just say, oh, it was in the past. No, it's right now. It's right here, right now. And because it was faced back then, history is repeating on a larger scale, even quicker, you know, in all of your guys' communities. So I think it's very important that we not disconnect that, you know, it was then, not now. And, you know, somehow it's not happening right now when it really is happening right now.
Yeah. And then not only that, but like, just like what gentrification looks like today. And it's not just housing, right? Like, we're not just saying, you know, these duplexes are the only things coming in, because I think sometimes there's that misconception. But even in places like where I'm from, Inglewood, like, gentrification looks like a stadium coming in and then claiming that there's all this like land that needs to be added to this like already huge lot, you know, that has a casino and it has the stadium and all this stuff. And then right next to it on Century, all these Section 8 housing were demolished and there was no other housing built over it, better housing or better structured Section 8 housing. It became a Michaels, a Hawaiian barbecue, Chili's, the Costco expanded. So like these things are still happening and they're repeating and they're using the same, like what you're trying to say, right? Like they're using the same arguments and we need to find ways to challenge that. Like it's already happened before. Like you said, history is repeating. So what are we gonna do to challenge that, right? And so,
Would be what we need to attack because inherently it's racist. And so
yes.
when they continue to enforce the same policy from the 1900s, you're going to continue to get the same outcome. So this is where we really need representation. We need people to not only politically engage and show up to the meetings, the planning meetings, we also need people to take office and to get
Yeah.
these corrupt city council people out and people that are willing to do the work and the will of the community step up and run for office.
Yeah, absolutely.
And before we do get into it a little bit more, could you tell us a little bit about yourself? Where did you grow up? What was it like growing up there? And also, what was your connection to these three communities?
I grew up in Echo Park with
Yeah.
my grandparents. After they were displaced from Palo Verde, they moved to Echo Park, and we had a few over there. And so, growing up, I mean, Echo Park was a very different community than it is today. It was close-knit, and a lot of people from the Echo Park all have ties and families to Palo Verde, La Loma, and Bishop. So, yeah, it was a close-knit. It went from one, area to another, and it remained very a close-knit community. During the 90s, it was heavily gang, but that's neither here nor there. That's LA, period, so
Yeah.
growing up, and then for a little bit of time, me and my moved to San Gabriel Valley, but then we moved back because there was no rent control. So the bigger portion of my life, I did reside in Echo Park than in San Gabriel Valley. And it was hard. It was hard. It wasn't easy, for me. I don't know if it was because of my family, their history, or what, but I never really felt connected, And
Yeah, would you like to tell them a little bit of what you're alluding to since they don't know your story or your family story?
my connection with these three communities and my family is the iconic picture that we see of the woman being dragged out by all four police officers,
Yeah.
is my great aunt. Which is the Arechiga family, which even the elder woman, which is Avrana Arechiga, is my great grandmother. There's photographs of my mother as a child being carried out by the meter maids of Los Angeles, because they did carry out the children as well. So my direct connection is to the Arechiga family, which is directly connected to Palo Verde of the three communities. However, what I make clear is even though my family is the most photographed as being resistant, there was many families who fought, and we were not the only ones, and so it's very important that history reflect that and include everybody because a lot of people fought hard, as much as people were scared and left too, many families fought back.
Yeah, there was like about, I think there was like 10 families at the end that went into court with your family as well. But I am almost certain that there was way more than 10 families who tried their best up to that point, to resist these, the gentrification coming, but like full on.
Eviction.
Yeah, exactly. Demolition on not only eviction, but like then you're watching the demolition of your home. Like, so it's not like you can go back to it later or tomorrow or in a few hours when they leave. They're literally making sure you don't come back to this area. And some people were in tents still living, there. It was a really like specifically aimed strategy and making sure that the community just dispersed in some weird magical way, right? And their fucked up idea of what should happen, after these evictions.
Yeah, it's erased.
Is there anything else you wanted to mention about growing up in Echo Park, like your family or anything like that?
No, other than a lot of people in Echo Park have ties to the three communities.
Right.
important to say, you know, and it's sad because, again, like we're talking about history repeating, now we see gentrification has wiped out a lot of the people, the long-term residents that live there that actually had ties to these three communities, you know, and yeah, it's just sad because you even see
It's like a second time at it, right? Like it's a second experience of that, like
and
eviction.
Then you still seeing, you know, people holding on to that corporation, you know, so it's kind of like, how can you say you're anti-gentrification yet be pro-Dodgers? Like it, the two just don't, they don't match. It's not a match.
And then what we were also saying is like the money that's funneled in from merchandise, from tickets, from all these things, do go into these lawyers and teams that work on shutting down and silencing people like yourselves and Buried Under the Blue and other people who want to express themselves about this horrible history that still hasn't been really talked about nor really healed or worked on, right? Reparations have been really small to none, right?
None at all. I think what the extent of what they did offer at one time was an olive branch. And I mean, what are we supposed to do with that?
Like a literal olive branch, right? You're like literally like a literal olive branch, right? I remember you saying they literally brought an olive branch, right?
And brought it. And for us, we're like, what are we supposed to do that with that? We can't even build a house with
right. Yeah. And what is that supposed to really do? Like, that's not.
For signify. You know, and then even with that, it was very selective in who they targeted to be at the event because they didn't bring the families that would be the most vocal and would resist. So, you know, to us, it was like in disingenuous for them. So
there's always a strategy behind even their quote unquote attempts to reconcile or attempt to like have a conversation around what it can look
there's
like.
There's no conversation about it. That was their only attempt to. I mean, I think they've done more to market to abstract brown dollars from brown people when they get creative and they put the bacon around the Dodger dog. You know, they've been more, they've put more intent or more energy into doing that to. For consumption, but not, and for abstraction, but not to genuinely be held accountable or to make things right.
Yeah. My next question for you is, what led you to start Buried Under the Blue, and who started it with you, if I can ask?
What led to start Buried Under the Blue was when I was attending UC Berkeley, and I was starting to rediscover myself, my roots, my history, and to start to learn and heal. I knew that something needed to be done in order to correct this injustice that had happened to my family, and I felt obligated, and I felt like it was my purpose and my calling to do something. So upon returning to Los Angeles, I met Vincent, who is related to my family. We're like cousins, and him as well and his family, you know, had spoken. We, you know, felt like, again, that it was something that needed to be corrected. And so together we collaborated to build Buried Under the Blue.
That's amazing. And just because I know sort of a like backstory, like, do you want to tell them a little bit about how you found out you were part of that history? Like, wasn't it at Berkeley where you took a course and then made the connections?
Well, no. Actually, my mother used to tell me stories.
Oh, okay. Yes.
However, there was no internet at the time. There was only Encyclopedia Britannica. I mean, and those are only like what published every couple of years. I don't even know, maybe 5, 10 years, you know.
Right.
It wasn't so readily available and accessible to do the research to find out. So when my mother would tell me these stories, I was like, oh my gosh, my mom is really good at telling stories, you know.
Yeah,
and I take it for the value of what she was trying to convey to me.
Yeah,
so when it really came visual to me was sitting in a class at UC Berkeley, and it was a class on the development of the city of Los Angeles and San Francisco. And that time, I was sitting in my class, and it was about a 300 student class, really big, and they put up visuals and started using and talking and. With my family's name, and I was just shocked, blown away, because now here are these stories that I remember as a kid, my mom telling me. And again, I just thought she was just telling me stories. I thought she was really, imaginative. You know, she had a great imagination. And comes to find out that there was more truth to what she was trying to convey to me at a young time. You know, then it led me to seek and search further. And then being at a major university that is a research-based university, my professors and having them to sit down with me and to kind of, help me to seek out support and resources. And yeah, because I believe that that's where I started my healing journey to really understand who I am and my to my family and their history and their trauma and even my own trauma and the things that led me down my path in life.
And that's something that we want to emphasize, right? Like, not the trauma, but the effects, right, of this eviction isn't just land. You know, families are affected and impacted in generational ways, right? And so it's beautiful that you're, starting to heal on your own, but it would be great if the community could start, right, to heal on its own, but with the support of these individuals who, should
Or these
have.
institutions, yeah, and the institutions take accountability for their actions, especially what we see, things like Bruce's Beach, and they're talking about, that they need to heal, that they need to fix these parts of history. Okay, that's great, and so add this one onto your to-do list as well, since we're, have that same energy for those.
Because it is part of that narrative, right? Like, this should be history that should be, brought back or talked about, and something should be done about it, right?
Absolutely, because again, we're talking about housing. We're talking about this is before there's covenants, there's laws on the books of Los Angeles that
Tell
say
them,
people of color cannot own home ownership. It's kept out of the hands of us. We're talking before the Chicano movement. This is segregation. You know, that a lot of times people put this hand in hand on the timeline with. Oh, this was civil rights. We're already, the Chicano movement. It's not properly. People are not grabbing the concept of where it falls on the timeline, and this is pre-civil rights, pre-Chicano
Absolutely.
movement.
This is like, and not only that, it's historical as well. Not that it's not historical and these events aren't historical, but it's important because these families fought hard, including your family, in court to make it clear and transparent as much as possible that they were not selling their land and they had never agreed to sell their land. And the agreement was some sort of like quote unquote rental, but like, how do you have that discussion now then, right? Like, you have rights as, the children and not only that, your mom, to say, okay, when do our families get their property back, right? Or how can we find ways to alleviate that, right? And bring back some sort of healing.
This is a small break in between episodes to introduce you to our sponsors and to also let you know about any possible events occurring this month. And if you enjoyed this episode with Melissa, the co-founder of Buried Under the Blue, please check out our new segment, Community Activists, where we interview various community organizers in our communities about what they're doing and how we can support them. We previously released two episodes with Wendy and Yvette, and both were participants of the demonstration at the Dodger Stadium. So find out about their experience and why they did that, but also about other things they are part of and how you can support them. Lastly, we wanted you to know that we are working on an article together as a collaboration, and we hope to release it really soon, and you will get to find out more about this history and so much more. So stay tuned.
Question for you is, what is the purpose of Buried Under the Blue? Like, what would you like to see?
Well, first things first, what list of demands together to release to the public. But the things that we've discussed so far is that one, we would like a public apology from the city of Los Angeles and the Dodgers. First, number one, that's the rightful thing is to publicly apologize. Two, would like reparations for all the families, whether renters or homeowners. Everybody deserves compensation that live there. Three, we would like three community centers in the names of the three communities, which is Palo Verde, La Loma, and Bishop, with everything so that this way we can work with the community to bring them in and teach them their rights about housing and different things like that. You know, and that's just a start, you know, and we also have interest in retrieving our relics and our artifacts that are unburied under the stadium if ever they decide to dig. We know that we would like our stuff from the school that's under there because they ripped off the roof of the school and threw dirt on top of us. So,
like literally the schoolyards, the buildings, everything's still there. It was, they just literally put soil inside of them.
Dirt. Yeah, they threw dirt on top of us. Hence the reason buried under the blue. That's why we said that, because even too in the community, when the women would give birth and maybe there was like a stillbirth or, you know, something tragic, right? I mean, people are buried up there. The placentas are buried up there. That's the indigenous way. And so, you know, when we literally say that there's community, a community under the stadium, it's not just said lightly. It's very intentional that, yes, there's three communities buried under the stadium. So you're stepping on your ancestors every time, that sacred land that you're stepping on, going into that stadium, watching that boring sport that was white, that didn't want brown or black people to participate in. You know, so I think we have to really come to terms and grips with all of that. I mean, it's for everybody to check their own moral compass. You know, I'm not here to tell people or dictate their life what they should do, to be a fan, not to be a fan, but to really be honest with yourself and reflect. Because as we talk about, or, you know, we see kids in the cages, brown babies, brown bodies, and then we say, who's going to do it for us? We have to do it for ourselves. Do we have the will to want to do it for ourselves? Because we fill up that stadium. Yeah, where's that same energy for ourselves?
Yeah, that's true. And I guess my next question is, how long has Buried Under the Blue, do you think, been around?
We were established in 2017.
Okay. And what has been the most recent demonstration that Buried Under the Blue has done?
We've been working closely with Chinatown and the activists from El Sereno and Highland Park, and even in Inglewood with some of the people here to stay. You know, we're always working with everybody on housing issues, because Chinatown is facing, what is that thing that they want to put in? I always get the word, the name of it wrong.
What is it?
Like that, that they put in, you know, and they're doing all this eviction to the elders. You know, there's a lot of slum lords over there, so, you know, we've been in solidarity. And for me, Chinatown is especially special to me because I was born in Chinatown, so, you know, that's I have a special kind of love for Chinatown, you know, so I'm always trying to be in solidarity with them. Likewise, Inglewood, because of ramification, and here to stay. I've met some of the families that were there that were taken advantage by the housing loans and stuff like that. Even Highland Park, all the washing of the murals. El Sereno, the taking over of the houses, all that stuff, you know, by Caltrans, when them hoarding the houses when they stopped the expansion of the 710, because why the rich white people in Pasadena had the money and the know-how. To how to stop it through civics. You know, that a lot of times our community isn't able to politically and civically engage because we're so bombarded with having to work to make ends meet. So we're everywhere, and we're always open to working with everybody, even in Long Beach too, who doesn't have any protections at all, because Long Beach is somehow not in the city charter and its own, and it runs by its own accord. So, you know, it's so kind of thing.
Some lords can do what they want and there's no restriction. Is that what you think?
Yeah, there's no RSO. And even RSO is very limited because, you know, they have no teeth to really bite, you know. And a lot of times what we've encountered is that RSO, the what is it, Hecla or something? I think that that's what it's called, the housing something. Side with the owners. You know, they really aren't there to be a neutral party. I've yet to kind of see that. I mean, you have to be even intelligent how to advocate on behalf of yourself and hold them accountable of what their system and structure was put in place to do. And so again, with you know LA tech unions, you know we've worked with No Olympics. You know, there's no stone left unturned. We're here for all the community, and we work with the closely with the neighborhood councils. You know, all of that stuff to help people. Yeah, I mean, it's what's hap what happened to us is happening to everybody throughout Los Angeles. And so,
And
yeah,
it's just
a lot of
keeps
work.
repeating itself. Because, like, when you even talk about Chinatown, right? Like, the original Chinatown, or you know, the Chinatown that people remember prior was where LA Union Station is, actually. So, there's a lot of like already, you know, painful history that people can talk about, you know, that are still there, right? But we can stop it, you know, if the 710 can be stopped, which is a full-on freeway, which I think, like, if I was younger, I would have thought, oh, that's impossible to stop a freeway. They have like all this, like, you know. But no, they were able to stop a full-on freeway, and then now they want to navigate it around working class communities that are, quote unquote, in their opinion, going to be okay with it, which is an absolute, you know, lie. Like, we're not okay with it. And they take advantage, like you said, of our schedules, working class schedules that, you know, do not allow to be at like these meetings or to be organizing, you know. And some people are doing it, you know, and people try even with their working schedules, right? And those are amazing community organizers, but we need more than that, you know, we need more support than that, and people need to show up, you know, way more, right?
Yeah, not just that. I mean, we understand why too. Sometimes our community is resistant to doing it because you're asking them to engage in a system that inherently has been racist towards us. You know, so it's not just about engaging, it's also taking taking seats on your neighborhood council, taking over the neighborhood council, you know, because each neighborhood council is allotted a certain amount of money. And we see you know, a lot of white gentrifiers taking on and redirecting money to
Basically
our
outsiders,
communities too.
right?
I'm sorry?
Basically outsiders to our own community, running our communities, basically.
Well, not so much outsiders because I guess you can, maybe you can run, or I'm not sure. I have to double check on the rules. I believe you have to live in the community that you
Oh,
run for
I
the
see.
neighborhood council.
Okay. You're right.
So they're within you know, the district or the little community that they live in. However, they understand how to navigate and organize events like all these art walks that we see, right?
Yes.
As cool as they are and they draw people from the community, a lot of times they're ran by white people behind, and then they bring our brown people, you know. And yes, we need to be in those spaces, but we also need to be the ones creating the events, not being used there to, as a prop for our brown face, when really it's
Right.
a white agenda behind it. So we
Yeah.
have to be
We don't know
very
what kind of tax
careful.
breaks these people are getting, and just in the advantage of using, you know, our artists, right, for their good face, right?
To make
Or
it
the
community base, and then our community members don't understand that they're being exploited, and not that they shouldn't be in those kind of spaces. And I'm not saying that those kind of events shouldn't happen. Absolutely, they should. However, we should be in control of our own destiny and our own communities, you know. And that's why it's important to join your neighborhood council. It's important representatives that are going to take the seats at the city council, and even the mayor. I mean, we have yeah, even I mean, what is it? Kevin De Leon now, who has an interest in running, wanting to run for mayor.
Right.
And I mean, him too, he has behind the scenes, if you look at the way he votes on the things that he has, he's continued to push the same racist policy. And again, if you're not going to change the policy, we're going to still get the same outcome. So
Right.
there's, it's very problematic when we are not addressing the policy and understanding, and people that are going to take those seats are willing to change it. If not,
Yeah.
all they're doing is with a brown face pushing a white agenda that'll chew us up and spit us out, and we're going to continue to get the same outcome. So it's very important that we understand all the mechanisms of how it works. And I think that, yeah, sometimes that's intimidating to a lot of our community members.
Yeah, because they're not politically savvy or have the education sometimes, because sometimes I don't even want to say that you just need the education to be able to do it, but you sometimes do, because you get, you know, the training and the experience to know, okay, what it is, but that's just not the knowledge that's getting funneled down to our communities, right, for some reason.
Well, yeah, I mean, even LA Unified School District in the 1950s removed civics from the curriculum intentionally because they projected that brown people would be the majority, like the U.S. Census has just released that we are the majority. And so therefore, if you would have given us the opportunity, because we're just as good as anybody else, and we've proven that many times, right? Like movies with Stand and Deliver, movies Spare Parts, that even with the bare minimum that we're able to excel and exceed. And I mean, it's inherently in our roots that our people were great, great people. We were extremely hyper, super. So imagine if we were just given an equal opportunity, what we would do. And I think that, you know, these things have been intentional to keep us oppressed, because you can't empower and take advantage of somebody at the same time. You have to pick your poison. And unfortunately, they've chose to dumb us down. And so I hope that this action that these brave indigenous revolutionary warriors did will inspire a whole new generation of warriors to rise and to really become informed, educated, well-written, well-spoken, well-informed, to do something for their community, to be active in a positive way that can change our future. Because right now, it doesn't look good, especially with this moratorium that's about to evict more people and even increase what we see right now. I mean, our streets are flooded with unhoused community.
Yeah. And I guess my other question is, in this conversation we're having, is what are other ways that people or listeners can support Buried Under the Bloom?
Well, when we release the demands, we would hope that you guys would share. We're also going to put it into a change.org petition to be circulated for support. So we would hope that you guys, I'm sorry?
To get signatures?
Yes. Yeah. And we would hope that people would sign and pass along and support. If you feel inspired, send us an email. If you have some skill set that you would like to lend to us, and so we could see how we could collaborate. It's a written piece, an art piece. I mean, we've had a lot of compelling people reach out to us. We even had a teacher, a second grade teacher, that says that he's teaching social justice to his children, and that they want to do a writing letter campaign to the city of Los Angeles. He would love to have his second graders write letters on behalf of us to ask for demands. And I think that, you know, that's the power of our people, the community, right?
Yes. And then these little young ones are learning to be leaders in their communities. They're learning how to become politically involved and get their voice out there, right? Like writing this letter. And then hopefully that'll inspire them, right?
Absolutely. Because, again, this is our duty and our civil engagement. And it is part of the political process, even though sometimes people think, like, what can a letter do? Right. But millions or thousands of letters, you know, thousands and millions of letters, and everybody on the same accord, it's very important. And it is politically engaging that sometimes, yeah, we don't understand, or we see it as nothing, but it is something. Because look at how it triggered your memory. Even though, you know, you want to downplay it, it's very important, because you're understanding the process and the structure and how to engage.
Yeah.
And that is one of the means.
You know, as a kid in working class community, I can say I didn't feel power a lot of the time. I didn't feel like I, you know, was any, like, able to do much or something like that. But in those, is there anything else you would like to add before we close?
You know, just to share as much as you can, you know, get informed in your community. If this inspired you, you know, really, tap into your communities, you know, tap into your neighborhood councils, tap into your city councils, you know, write those letters, create those pieces, poetry, art, you know, sing about it. I mean, whatever, you know, just get active right now because we need to really understand who we are. It's important that we reconnect and seek out our roots and our ancestors and really, you know, reconnect to
Yeah.
who. It's important.
Well, thank you so much, everyone, for being here, for being so open, coming on the podcast. And I hope that our listeners really show some support, not only by checking out your website and your different accounts and that they follow and support and share, but also that they're able to come and show support if they are from around here or that they just individually start to be more proactive in their own city, you know, and becoming part of what's going on in the community and feeling more power in stopping stuff like gentrification, right? And lastly, if you haven't checked out our magazine, of course, please check it out, LatinaChicaSpeaksMagazine.com. Follow us on all these different social media platforms. We have a TikTok, Latina Chica Speaks. We have a Twitter, Latina Chica One. We have Instagram, like I said before, Latina Chica Speaks Magazine, Latina Chica Speaks Pods. And you can always email us to latinachicaspeaks@gmail.com. And this podcast, of course, is on seven different platforms. So if you're listening to this on a platform that you do not normally listen to, go check us out. Go hit podcasts on our website, and we should have different platforms that you could find us on. And lastly, do you guys want to tell them one more time where they can find you guys?
Yes, you can find us at www.buriedunderTheBlue.com. Our social media handlers is Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook.
Thank you so much, everyone, for being here. And thank you, everyone, for listening today. And we hope that you enjoyed this episode. Please reach out. Let us know if you have any questions, concerns. Hit up Buried Under the Blue, or you can hit us up and we can always ask those questions for you if you're too shy. But don't be shy. These people are amazing, loving individuals who want to spread the info, the knowledge, and also help everyone get to where they want to, like supporting other things in your communities that maybe need support as well. And I guess this is the part where we say goodbye. Bye, everyone.
Hi, thank you for having us. We appreciate you.